This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Hey, I'm Jake Brennan, and I want to tell you about Disgraceland, the award-winning music and true crime podcast that I host. Disgraceland tells the stories of musicians getting away with murder and behaving very badly. Fleetwood Mac, Nipsey Hussle, Cardi B, Ozzy Osbourne, Taylor Swift, Tupac, The Beatles, Amy Winehouse, Jay-Z, The Grateful Dead, and so many more. This is not the music history you've heard before. This is an uncensored, immersive look at the lives of musical icons as seen through the crimes they've committed or that have been perpetrated against them. Did Jerry Lee Lewis murder his fifth wife? What really happened to Sam Cooke in that seedy motel at 3 a.m.? And how did the Rolling Stones wind up sleeping with the First Lady? Wait, what? New episodes of Disgraceland drop every Tuesday with bonus episodes released on Mondays and Thursdays. So get in, buckle up, and join me in Disgraceland. Available right now, wherever you get your podcasts. Rock and roll.
These two songs that Mr. Edge has played his guitar on, they have no words, except one of them does. Jackknife has this software that some of the K-pop bands, like the ones that are not real, like the AI ones, use, where you type in words and it sings them for you.
Hi, this is Lowell Tolhurst, co-founder of The Cure.
And this is Budgie, co-founder of The Creatures, drummer with The Slits, and Susie and the Banshees.
Welcome to Curious Creatures.
Life after punk.
You may think you know the territory, but we drew the map.
It's snowing here in Berlin. How is it in Los Angeles, Lom?
Well, in Los Angeles, I have to tell you, it's a sunny day outside again, as usual. I'm
just going to. Guy's boring, isn't it? Ain't boring, just like, you know, yeah.
70 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 21.
Oh, quick. 21 Celsius.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, at the moment it's -3 Celsius here in
good
Berlin.
Lord. Oh, good Lord.
I'm with the wind chill factor. It goes down to about -7.
Oh, my God.
When it gets down to -7, it's not chilly.
No.
It's blooming freezing. Anyway, what are we doing tonight? I know what we're doing.
Well, we're going to talk about a couple of instrumentals on our new album.
We are, because we couldn't find the Edge. Certainly not we're not the famous one anyway.
No, the famous one is in Las Vegas, or as they call it here, Lost Wages in Nevada.
He's doing the spherical show with you two. Yeah, it sounds marvy. It sounds marvelous. Is Jackknife's there as well?
I believe so. Yes.
So I suppose it's hard to talk about somebody as who's been around as long as we have.
Yes, he's as long in the tooth as what we is.
We didn't meet him during the recording of these pieces because he sent them via his direct Ethernet cable link-up with Jackknife Studio, correct?
Yeah, across the canyon. They just string it across the top of the canyon.
Just one of those. Like we used to do with like a tin can and a piece of string.
Right, I was thinking more that way. Yeah, that would be more like it. So it was, yeah, and it worked.
Can you hear me? Jackknife, can you hear the guitar?
It sounds great. Sounds great there. I'm not even going to try and do a London accent because Jackknife Lee hasn't got one anyway. Neither have I.
No, he does. He has got an impersonation of a London accent.
I hear Bono's pretty good at impersonations. Yeah. Yeah. Who is the sound of U2? Just off, you know, one of those quick off-the-cuff questions to ourselves.
Who is the sound of U2?
If you think of U2, do you think of Larry? Do you think of...
Adam?
Of course. Thank you.
Yeah.
I have that thing about bass players. I can never remember bass players' names.
The only bass players I remember the name is Mickey D and Simon G. And that's it.
Okay. Barry Adamson, I can remember. Barry Adamson.
He played bass?
Barry played bass for Magazine and the Bad Seeds.
I knew he was in Magazine. I didn't know he was a bass player.
Yeah. I don't think Barry knew he was a bass player either, you know.
He wrote a good book. I've read his book. It's really good.
It's like a detective movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It was very noir.
Yes. Had some good nights with Barry, I remember, somewhere along the line. But so who's the sound of you two?
Well, I think it's The Edge, isn't it?
I suppose it's a bit of one of those questions because he is the sound. Bono is the voice. Although Edge also does a lot of vocalizing as well.
Yeah.
Somebody said, "So you got the Edge on the album," and I was going, "Yeah." So what's that like? And I remember sort of it was the first time I'd been asked the question, and I was kind of a bit overwhelmed and went, "Well, isn't it just? It's marvelous, isn't it?" And it is that there is a kind of like nice feeling of, you know, when somebody, I think I did say this, somebody who's as busy as the Edge can be, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Finds the time to, you know, strum a few notes for you.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's likes to get away from the day job. Let's say that,
yeah.
You know, it's like, because there's a certain style of playing that he has to employ with you two. So, but he's also, people forget that he's done a lot of sort of avant-garde experimental work with people like Wobble and different things, you know. So maybe this was a chance for him, he felt, to do some more.
Well, he picked the right tracks.
He did. He picked the right tracks. Noche Oscura, which is, you know, translates as Dark Night of the Soul.
That suits, that fits.
Yeah. And Train With No Station, which came to me in a feverish night of some sort. And I was thinking, that's what we are, Trains With No Station.
Well, I liked that because it suited the beat. And actually, you know, it was your drum beat, I remember, because it was about only a like second day in the studio. And you know, I managed to, you know, cajole you over to the kit. Go on, have a sit down over there, Lon. Go on, have a sit down. Because you were messing around with all his synthesizers,
yeah.
You know, in the control rooms. But I got you to the kit and I knew it was mic'd up. And you started playing and I could hear it. And it was like, That beat.
Every drummer has one beat, right?
But there was no sign of any kind of communication going on between control room. Jackknife was busy doing his thing. Matt, our engineer, was making tea in the same room you were in, putting mics up on the kit, if I remember.
Yeah.
And you were playing for about, like, maybe, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, something like this. You were just knocking around and just getting strong. And then you kind of went, what? And then you came out and we're like, well, okay. And that was it. And nothing really happened. And I say, that's great. And I remember then it was like the next day, it was leaving. I think you said, I don't think he's even recording. Was he even recording? I said, I don't know. And anyway, the next day we got in.
There it was.
Have a listen to this. Was that usual trick? Of course, he had everything was ready to go, and that was the nice thing about that situation. Where you just sat down, started playing, and it was recording. Everything was.
You know who else did that particular trick? Which, you know, it's not a trick really. It's just a. You know,
it's being ready, isn't it? It's
being ready in the studio because Phil Thornley would, you know, when we were recording, like, you know, Pornography with him, he would, you know, we'd be out there, we'd be bashing through things, and then he'd go at some point, he'd go, oh yeah, the tape, she rolls, and then
there she rolls.
But that was always at least 20 seconds after he had actually done it. So he captured all the ins and outs, you know. like all of Messing's about. And
people forget, though, back in the day with tape machines, you know, that these things had to be lined up and readied. So luckily, we never wandered in at 9 o'clock in the morning. Not usually, anyway. We probably wandered out at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
Ready for the day session, but we were probably on a lockout as well, so nobody else went in. So they could fumigate the place. but there's no real excuse for not being ready with a little laptop-y sort of...
No, you press the thing. You don't even have to sit behind that big box that, like, engineers love to sort of shuffle around between their legs and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, punch-ins for doing drop-in, you know, and, like, banging that thing hard, you know.
So anyway, we got the drone track down, and... we hear the Edge is going to lend us a few things, send us a few things. And Jackknife said that he sent over loads of stuff.
Yeah.
He said, but he was wondering what, because it was all acoustic guitar.
That's right. It was all acoustic. And I happen to know, because I've talked to various people, and Mr. Edge has a veritable smorgasbord of effects for his guitar going on, you know, on stage, under the stage, backstage.
It's a computer mainframe, I think he's got there.
Yeah.
He's got something the size of Bitcoin.
Yeah, or a small swimming pool.
Yep, yep. When everybody else's computers have gone small, some people have gone bigger.
Bigger, much bigger.
I think he's signal processing, I think, is his...
Yeah, that's his hobby.
Yeah. So, surprising that it came unprocessed, is that correct? Lots of picking.
Yeah, so all the processing that was done, done by Mr. Jack the Knife.
Jack the Knife.
Yeah, he did it. He did it.
He's quite something, isn't he, with his processing? Because it's a thing that good producers that we've worked with, you know, there are some people who are good at capturing the sound of the instrument or the take, whatever it might be. And then there's the added... I don't know, in that process, they're actually processing it and recording that as well.
Right.
Again, back in the day, you had to record, you had the option to record the processed sound or the clean sound. Maybe you had both.
Yeah,
Hedges would always do that because you used to get kind of excited and you'd start to play with the processed sound rather than the pure sound. And then it sounded naff if you just heard the clean signal back. Be it drums or guitar or whatever. So, no, interesting. And what it also tells me is that, and I've been thinking about this, you can tell, because I'm on a roll now. I'm following a train of thought. It's a train with no station, maybe, so you might have to stop me.
Okay.
But it's that thought train set in motion. It's a Brian Ferry lyric, by the way.
Yeah. I like Westbound Train. That was... who was that? That was Dennis Brown.
Which train was that?
The Westbound Train.
Ah, yes.
He's leaving on the Westbound Train, which was a euphemism, I believe, for, like, you know, he's going away or he's going to pass away, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. I like The Last Train to Clarksville.
Yeah, The Last Train to Clarksville. That was, yeah, wow, the Monkees.
The last train to Clarksville, and I'll meet you at... See, we're both wagging our heads now. Anyway... I did have a train of thought, but it's probably gone now.
No.
But I don't know if I'll ever come in home. I like the guitar on that.
Yeah.
Train of thought. Well, I know where it was going now. We just passed Woolly Edge Services just outside Leeds. And it tells me that Jackknife commands respect and trust. He doesn't command trust. He receives it. He benefits from the trust of the people he's worked with.
Yeah,
because that was a lot of the key to the reason we have some amazing guests on the album is that they Jackknife had worked with some of them, and certainly with you too, and that tells me that, you know, it was a good relationship, and they trust him. You know, so. That's kind of a good thing. It was a good thing for us, but they also, it could have been anybody. It wasn't just anybody, you know. It was us. And I think that was a really sweet gesture, you know, on behalf of James and Isaac and Bobby and the Edge as well, you know, that they kind of said, cool. Like, I want to be like, do something for this. And what's nice about these two tracks is I've lost my train of thought now. It went, the train just kind of
it left the station.
It went off without me. No, but I suppose, but the tracks we're talking about, these are, in fact, the way the album was going to be.
Yeah, because initially we conceived it. We conceived the album, as being instrumental, because that's part of the reason we have the name the way we did. We were thinking it being a bit like, you know, Mobius, Rodelius, and Eno. You know, it was going to be that kind.
Frippinino as well.
Frippinino, and it was going to be that kind of a record, and that's. Really, do you remember when we first started, we made some like a couple of tracks where they have like something quite not rocking, but something quite propelled at the beginning, and then it just leaves a big empty space. That's how Skins started, remember? Because
you've
got like all this beautiful drums, and then it's just suddenly drops down this big hole. And that was really the only direction I remember we said to Jackknife at the beginning, you know, we want it very, very big in the middle and then popping out at the end and just like big space.
Yeah, like a good donut.
Yeah, like a good donut. Well, it is. Yeah. It's like Mobius, you know.
Big round the edge, lots of stuff. Yeah, and then a nice big space in the middle.
Mm-hmm. The old band did the records like you know, lots of nice bits in the highs, some very deep lows, and then, you know, it's big space in the middle, a big empty space. Because here's the other thing, dear listeners, that we might forget from time to time. Music is not just the sounds, it's the space. You know, it's the bits in between as much as it is the actual notes. I mean, this came to me, this revelation, well, it's not a revelation, but a couple of years ago, I was in Peru, and I was up in Machu Picchu, and I saw how the Incas, who you know, built all of that, conceived of things in the world. And it totally blew my mind to realize that they looked at the star systems 180 degrees differently than the Western world. You know, it was like they looked at it as like, well, it's not the constellations, it's the space inside of it. I think that's the thing, you know, and now I'm going to go very Rick Rubin, but that's the thing of our music, right? It's like, it's as much about what isn't there as what is there.
As a kid, I listened to a lot of instrumental music, you know, be it Winifred Atwell on the piano.
Right.
She might have whistled a bit, but she played the piano. And there was lots of dance bands and 78s. There was not a lot of singing. Pennsylvania 65,000. Exactly. And I loved that. I love that stuff. But I could sing all the songs. And similarly, when we had like big kind of star in Britain was Cliff Richard. He was like a squeaky clean kind of young man. But he had a backing band. He picked up these
The Shadows.
And the Shadows had songs in their own right. And my first little band I got together when I was like, I teamed up with when I first started playing drums, we did Shadows tunes. And they were instrumentals. And they were actually, I knew them before anybody came along saying, can you play drums? And I went, yes, which I couldn't. But I knew all the songs because I used to sing myself to sleep with Shadows instrumentals. So I knew, you know, Wonderful Land and The Rise and Fall of Flignal Blunt or something, whoever that was. Down da da down da down da could even I had all the guitar tones in my head. So I knew these arrangements and these songs and I never once thought there was something missing. Never, you know, it didn't occur to me that like nobody was singing. It just seemed like perfectly fine. And we used to get a lot of instrumental music in the charts then as well. Liquidator was a reggae tune. Grooving with Mr. Blow.
Grooving with Mr. Blow, I remember that. And then there was Moldy Old Dough.
Yeah, the old, the song.
What's his name? I don't know who it was.
That was to Cockney geezers.
And his mum.
And Chaz and Dave, innit?
Chaz and Dave. Great.
And I was going to say another one. Chicken Tip,
Son of my father. Yeah.
Oh, they did have words, didn't they?
I
really didn't care about those words. All I cared about was a Moog synthesizer.
Yeah, that was pretty groovy. Anyway, we digress. These two songs that Mr. Edge has played his guitar on, they have no words, except one of them does.
Pray tell. Extrapolate on this point.
Train with No Station. Well, we thought, maybe it should have something on it. And my son, Gray, had written a poem, and I thought, I like the words of that. Can I use them? It fitted nicely with the overall concept. And then Jackknife has this software that some of the K-pop bands, like the ones that are not real, like the AI ones, use, where you type in words and it sings them for you.
Right.
So it's a sort of AI vocal.
It's amazing. I remember him talking about that because he said it's not artificial intelligence, and it's not just certainly not a vocoder, because I think a lot of people thought it was. Right.
That's what we thought it was. I thought it was a vocoder. I was like, oh yes, vocoder.
And he's saying it's because it's kind of got its own emotion. It's got its own emotional content. It's not really sad. It's somewhere between human emotion.
Yeah.
And it kind of really makes it a little distinct.
Yeah.
And a little unnerving. And very beautiful as well. Yeah.
I saw a photograph of God, closer to the edge of love. Symmetry inside of us. I was two, now we are one. I spoke and broke the silhouette. Moved and stared into the garden of friends. Every action laments. There is always one to pay for in my face. Saying what you cannot be.
I like it. I was listening to some old Banshee stuff as well. And I know that The Edge has cited John McGeoch as coming up in his wake a little. You know, because we were very close in starting, but at that point, when you're that age, if like a year's gap is huge.
Oh, it makes a lot of difference. It makes a whole world of difference. Yeah.
So it's kind of, for me, it was like, so there was a kind of like, it had an extra little bit of sweet charm that, you know, almost The Edge was kind of channeling a little bit of. I always remember John McGeoch saying when he joined the Banshees, he was in an acoustic guitar picking phase.
How did that go down with certain parties in the Banshees?
He just never told them, you know. It's because it was always, you know, there was acoustic guitar. Dun 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 down down dun 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 down down. So there'll be that kind of, but it got translated onto electric as well. Christine, yeah. Mostly acoustic guitar.
All right.
And I do believe Madame SS was playing acoustic guitar in the video for Christine.
Wow. Yeah.
Certainly strumming that chord. That chord, by the way.
Yes. That boom.
The opening chord of Christine.
Yeah.
It's got to be a direct lift of a Beatles chord.
Ah.
If anybody could tell me what that chord is, I can tell you the song to go and look for it.
Yeah.
I think it's a song called A Hard Day's Night. And it's one of those chords that's like probably a super open, augmented, diminished.
It's A Hard Day's Night. And now you could expect a call from Paul McCartney's lawyer.
You were saying before, it's about the spaces. When in our younger days, you would look and hope to be able to fill as many spaces as you could.
Right, with some kind of sound or some kind of instrumentation. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Or if you were a lyricist, a lot of words. But some people said they wrote a lot of words. Peter Gabriel used to write a lot of words.
Oh, my good Lord, yes. Yeah.
There's a whole book on the back of a Genesis album. But it's nice. We'd have been happy with our instrumental project as we'd kind of thought it was going to be. And everything else has just been kind of a blessing or
icing
on the cake with a cherry on the top. And the real, I suppose, cherries are the people who come forward and you know, gave us their time and their talent. Yes.
And they gave it to us freely, you know, didn't put any conditions on it, just said, I'll do something. If you like it, you can use it. And that was great. Yeah, it's very nice.
I think we've got blood to donate, though.
Well, yeah. There's probably a payback sooner or later, but, you know, whatever the great universe will tell us, we'll find out what it is.
But I think we just say thank you to The Edge.
Thank you, Edge.
Just say that we love you dearly, and anything that we might have said that might have sounded like, you know, we didn't intend it to sound like, well, we didn't mean it.
It wasn't supposed to sound like that at all.
No, we didn't mean it. We mean it most sincerely.
We love you, Edge. Edge, we love you.
We do. We do. Can we come and see you in Las Vegas? Can we? Hey, whilst we're on that, we might as well give a little plug, because the poster's out and the news is broken that we have our first gig coming up, May the 11th, 2024.
Yeah, we're playing the Cruel World Festival, May the 11th, 2024, Brookside at the Rose Bowl, Pasadena, California.
Nice. How's the weather?
It's going to be warm.
So, everybody, get your day passes now. I see that Tones on Tail are already promoting the day passes.
Yeah, we've had to actually do another bit as well. It appears, dear listeners, you'll be able to buy Curious Creatures apparel from our website.
Oh, you mean like T-shirts?
Yeah, like T-shirts or my favourite, the hoodie. I'm getting a hoodie.
Yeah.
Right. And a mug that you can have two different versions of, a black one or a red one.
You've done this before, haven't you? You know about this selling stuff.
Yeah. Curious Creatures is presented by Lol Tolhurst and Budgie.
Producer, Joe Wong.
Producer and audio design, Dan Didier.
Executive producer, Mark Cates.
Associate producer, Sophie Wild.
Associate producer and digital marketing, Marge Taylor.
Visual designer, Justin Thomas Kay.
Music production, Jack Knife Lee.
Assistant editor, Ben Miller.
Curious Creatures is on the web, and you can access us at www.curiouscreaturespodcast.com.
And you can reach us on Instagram and Facebook at Curious Creatures Official, Twitter at Cura Creatures.
To find more of the best music podcasts, visit doubleelvis.com or follow at doubleelvis on Instagram or at doubleelvis on Twitter.
Curious Creatures is a production of LXB LLC 2024.